This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli, sitting in for Terry Gross. L. Frank Baum was 44 when The Wonderful Wizard of Oz was published 100 years ago. Michael Patrick Hearn was only 20 years old, and still a college student, when he published his annotated Wizard of Oz book back in 1973. Since then, Hearn has written many other books, including annotated versions of A Christmas Carol and Huckleberry Finn. But now, in honor of the centennial of The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, Hearn has returned to the book he first annotated 27 years ago and analyzed it all over again in a deluxe new edition published by W.W. Norton. I asked Michael Patrick Hearn what some of his favorite discoveries were while annotating this new edition.
Well, I think finding out who the possible model for Dorothy was. And this came from Dr. Sally Rush Wagner, who is doing a book on Baum's mother-in-law, Matilda Jocelyn Gage, who is one of the great 19th century feminists. She worked with Anthony and Stanton and turned out to be too radical for them, so she's been written out of feminist history. But she had enormous impact on L. Frank Baum. But Sally and I knew Baum's niece, Matilda Jewel Gage, named after her grandmother. Mm-hmm. And in 1898, the last child in that generation was named Dorothy. She was Matilda's little sister, and she died that year. And Matilda always felt that the child that died was the Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz. There's even a letter that Maude wrote to Dorothy's parents saying that she wished she had that daughter herself. And of course, Maude Baum, L. Frank Baum's wife, Frank and Maude Baum never had any daughters of their own. They had four sons. So in a sense, this was the little girl that Baum gave his wife in The Wizard of Oz, and he dedicated it to his wife, Maude.
I don't mean this to be a pop quiz, but I'm sure that you're familiar enough with some of your notations to be able to give us thumbnails on some of the things that strike out in terms of what you were able to research, both the first time you annotated the book and then this new time, on derivations of certain words and characters in the book.
Well, such as the word Oz.
Yes.
The story that Baum gave, he gave it to Publishers Weekly. This is a couple of years after The Wizard of Oz came out. And he said that he was writing the story, and he needed a name, and nothing seemed to come to him. So he was looking around his study, his library, and his eye fell on his filing cabinet, and there were three drawers, A to G, H to N, and O to Z, and that's where Oz came from.
Talk about the origin of the Munchkins.
The Munchkins. My suspicion, Baum was in part German descent, and I think he may have been thinking of Baron Munchausen, who created all these wild stories, very Oz-like tales. Also, Brian Atterbury, who's an Oz scholar, suggested that Baum may have been thinking of Munchkind, which is a statue in Munich, and he may have been thinking of that when he created the Munchkins. And the other thing is that Atterbury states that blue is the color of Munich, which, of course, is also the color of the Munchkins, favorite color of the Munchkins.
You do an awful lot with color in your notations.
Well, Baum did, certainly in the first edition, because Baum and Denslow paid for the publication of the book, for the making of the color plates, and they were very concerned that there were color illustrations. And so Baum and Denslow worked out a color scheme in the story and in the illustrations so that as Dorothy goes from one place to another, the color scheme changes so that she starts off in Great Kansas, goes to Munchkin Land, where blue is the favorite color, goes to the Deadly Poppy Field, where the illustrations are in red, then the Green Emerald City, then on to the Winkies in the west, where yellow is the favorite color. So we get this sort of rainbow effect from illustration to from signature to signature.
And another color question, the Yellow Brick Road.
Well, my suspicion is that Baum was thinking, what is a better way to go from a blue country, the Munchkin Land, to the Green Emerald City than through a yellow brick road, because, of course, blue and yellow make green.
It's been 100 years. Why mm-hmm. do you think the book has lasted so long? It can't just be the movie, because the movie didn't come out until 39.
And, of course, MGM wouldn't have made the movie if the book hadn't been a big success before that. But I think it's just, first of all, it's a great story. I think everybody The idea of going to another country, leaving your drab life in Kansas or wherever, and going on to this extraordinary land full of danger but also full of wonders, and then coming back home again, I think that appeals to everyone. I think also the creation of Dorothy is a very distinctive character in American literature. In fact, feminist writers have embraced Dorothy, claiming that she's probably the first true feminist heroine in American children's literature. They don't even accept Little Women because Jo March marries Professor Bear at the end. And, of course, Dorothy does not wait for her prince to come. She goes out. She goes. Nothing's going to keep this girl from getting back to Kansas. So she has this determination, this self-resolve to go out and get what she wants and then return to her Aunt Em and Uncle Henry.
Actually, if you go back 100 years, you don't even have to have the disclaimer of children's literature. She would be one of the first in literature, period, wouldn't she?
Very likely. Very likely. And I certainly think that's the influence of Baum's mother. Another thing you have to recognize, too, is power in Oz resides in women, not in men, whether it's the Wicked Witch or the Good Witch. It certainly isn't in the wizard, who turns out to be a fraud.
Tell us a little bit about Baum. He was, what, 44?
He was 44 when he published The Wizard of Oz, yes. And he was born in central New York, 1856. He grew up in Syracuse, New York. His father made his fortune in oil, Pennsylvania oil industry. And Baum tried all sorts of things. He grew up in a very wealthy family. His sisters and brothers did well on their own. And he tried so many different things. He was pretty much a rainbow chaser, so to speak. He was always looking for the next big project or something that would make his fortune. And so he raised chickens, he sold axle grease, he had a store in South Dakota that failed, he had a newspaper in South Dakota that failed, he sold crockery on the road. He did everything he could, and it wasn't until he finally realized the power in himself as a storyteller that he began making a name for himself as a writer.
My guest is Michael Patrick Hearn, author of the newly revised Annotated Wizard of Oz. Let's really look at the book and the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say the movie, I mean there have been so many adaptations of Oz that Hollywood have made, but this is the one that has sort of crystallized everything. So I wonder where
you
stand.
You mean that one with Judy Garland?
That one with Judy Garland. So I've seen a quote from you that said it was unforgivable that Oz...
Unforgivable.
Unforgivable that in the movie, in that movie, that Oz was bookended as a dream. So let's start there. Why is it unforgivable?
Well, in Baum's story, Dorothy actually goes to Oz. It's a real, truly live place, as Judy Garland says at the end. It's not a dream. It's not a fantasy. Baum's Dorothy does not have to get hit on the head to enter this wonderful country. And I think with kids, they don't want Oz to end when Dorothy wakes up. They want it to continue forever. And it really, in the book, it really does have this three-dimensionality. It seems to be a real place where you could visit if you just happened to be picked up by a cyclone and taken there.
So in the movie, what were the things that they adapted and changed that you felt were loyal to Baum's spirit and that pleased you the most, and which were the things by which you were most offended?
Oh, well, let's see. Of course, in the book, Dorothy wears silver shoes rather than ruby slippers. Mm-hmm. And I asked Margaret Hamilton about that one time. Margaret Hamilton was the Wicked Witch, and she said that she had grown up in the Oz books and she loved the silver shoes, so she asked Mervyn LeRoy why they made the change, and he said, well, a red looks much better against yellow in Technicolor. A completely practical reason, which is so typical Hollywood. And you don't have the farmhands in the beginning who become the characters in Dorothy's delusion. That was an invention of the first screenwriter. And you don't have this long prologue. I think it's only a few pages are spent in Kansas. A Baum can't wait to get to Oz, as Dorothy can't either.
Was there anything in the movie you liked? I mean, really liked?
I really enjoy the movie. I framed that
question a little too accusatorily. I'm sorry. But I mean,
it is a different experience, but I think they really captured the spirit of Baum. I also edited the screenplay the first publication screenplay. This was in 1989, and I read through all the different scripts and was able to check all the different script changes, and it's remarkable how different the original script was and how slowly they were working through all these awful drafts and complicated plot devices until they finally came back and made it simpler and closer to the book. And I really do feel it did capture the spirit of Baum, even if it didn't adapt every single episode from the story itself.
I don't know if it seems sacrilegious to you, but I feel that the death scene of the Wicked Witch of the West was infinitely better written in the movie than it was in Baum's original book, simply because the witch's last words in the book are like, "Look out, here I go," rather than what a world," which to me is so much more fun. So.
Well, I think it's also Margaret Hamilton, too. I also heard her read that episode once, and I think she brought to it a lot that she had also brought to the character in the movie. And I think one important thing about that whole destruction of the Wicked Witch of the West is that in the book, Dorothy is mad. She loses her temper with the Wicked Witch. The Wicked Witch tries to steal one of her silver shoes, and she's so angry she douses her with a bucket of water. In the movie, it's Judy Garland trying to save the Scarecrow, who then just hits Margaret Hamilton smack in the face with that bucket of water. The movie sort of resolves Dorothy. It's an accident that the Wicked Witch of the West is destroyed, but in the book, Dorothy is really mad, and that's how she gets rid of the Wicked Witch.
If there's something in a source material, and let's just use something from The Wizard of Oz, that you wanted to get to the bottom of, you knew it meant something, but you didn't know what, where do you go to find that out?
It really depends. Sometimes I go to contemporary reviews. Sometimes things are revealed there. Going through Baum's letters. I mean, this is what a biographer does. I mean, you have to love to read other people's mail to be a biographer. And Baum did not talk a great deal about his writing. And I think that's also significant. I don't think he thought a great deal about it once he put it on the page and once it came out. But you do find little indications here and there. I've also interviewed members of the family, some people, people who actually knew L. Frank Baum when they were growing up. And then just contemporary sources, checking if I'm doing something on Baum as an axle grease manufacturer, I look in the various trade magazines. I found out, color theory through articles that were in his Window Trimmers magazine.
That was probably, if you can spend a little bit of time on it, that's probably the most impressive thing to me in this new notation was your color theory drawings that had all of these lands overlapping as colors would overlap and you would have primary colors that would turn into secondary ones.
Well, that's the traditional color wheel. And Baum published a series of articles. Yeah, his journal, The Show Window, he was editing a magazine for window trimmers when he was writing The Wizard of Oz. And they're very interested in color coordination and color harmony in design. And so he published this series. So I'm sure he was conscious of, just the basics of color theory through these articles. And, of course, this is concurrent. He's publishing concurrently while he was writing the book. And, that is the traditional color wheel. And it does seem to fit the pattern of The Land of Oz.
Michael Patrick Hearn is the author of The Annotated Wizard of Oz.